Our true home is in the present moment. To live in the present moment is a miracle. The miracle is not to walk on water. The miracle is to walk on the green earth in the present moment. To appreciate the peace and beauty that are available now. For peace is all around us, in the world and in nature and within us, in our bodies and our spirits. Once we learn to touch this peace, we will be healed and transformed. This is not a matter of faith. This is a matter of practice. And I invite you again to remain seated and join in our centering hymn number 391, Voice Still and Small. And we have two readings before the sermon this morning, and John Kuhn has graciously agreed to do the first one.
Our first reading is entitled, There Is No God, written by Penn Jillette, and it was written for NPR's This I Believe. I believe that there is no God. I'm beyond atheism. Atheism is not believing in God. Not believing in God is easy. You can't prove a negative, so there's no work to do. You can't prove that there isn't an elephant inside the trunk of my car. You sure? How about now? Maybe it was just hiding before. Check again. Did I mention that my personal, heartfelt definition of the word elephant includes mystery, order, goodness, love, and a spare tire? So anyone with a love for truth outside of herself has to start with no belief in God and then look for evidence of God. She needs to search for some objective evidence of a supernatural power. All the people I write emails to often are still stuck at this searching stage. The atheism part is easy. But this I believe, thing seems to demand something more personal, some leap of faith that helps one see life's big picture, some rules to live by. So I'm saying, this I believe there is no God. Having taken that step, it informs every moment of my life. I'm not greedy. I have love, blue skies, rainbows, and Hallmark cards, and that has to be enough. It has to be enough, but it's everything in the world, and everything in the world is plenty for me. It seems just rude to beg the invisible for more. Just the love of my family that raised me, and the family I'm raising now, is enough that I don't need heaven. I won the huge genetic lottery, and I get joy every day. Believing there's no God means I can't really be forgiven except by kindness and faulty memories. That's good. It makes me want to be more thoughtful. I have to treat people right the first time around. Believing there's no God stops me from being solipsistic. I can read ideas from all different people, from all different cultures. Without God, we can agree on reality, and I can keep learning where I'm wrong. We can all keep adjusting so we can really communicate. I don't travel in circles where people say, I have faith, I believe this in my heart, and nothing you can say or do can shake my faith. That's just a long-winded religious way to say, shut up, or another two words that the FCC likes less. But all obscenity is less insulting than how I was brought up and my imaginary friend means more to me than anything you can ever say or do. So believing there is no God lets me to be proven wrong, and that's always fun. It means I'm learning something. Believing there is no God means the suffering I've seen in my family, and indeed all the suffering in the world, isn't caused by an omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent force that isn't bothered to help or is just testing us, but rather something we all may be able to help others with in the future. No God means the possibility of less suffering in the future. Believing there is no God gives me more room for belief in family, people, love, truth, beauty, sex, Jello, and all the other things I can prove that makes this life the best life I will ever have.
Thank you, John. Our second reading is an excerpt from a wonderful little book by Chet Ramo called When God Is Gone, Everything Is Holy. Ramo writes, as I write, two books that do their best to reduce God ad absurdum are being talked about everywhere. Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion and Sam Harris's The End of Faith. These authors go at religion like B-movie slashers armed with Occam's razor. And by the time they are finished, there is not much left but the gory shreds of miracles and superstitions. But I won't go where Dawkins and Harris would like to take me. Something is amiss with their militant slash-and-burn atheism. If I could switch metaphors and turn the new one on its ear, Dawkins and Harris throw out the bathwater with the baby. Now, to explain, in my inverted cliche, let the bathwater stand for the mind-stretching, jaw-dropping, in-your-face wonder of the universe itself, the mystery that hides in every rainbow, every snowflake, every living cell. After all, water, as much as anything in our environment, is an adequate symbol for the creative agency that forges atoms in the hot earth with the stuff of life and consciousness, an agency worthy of attention, reverence, thanksgiving, and praise. Now, as for the baby, let that represent the cultural accretions that religious traditions have affixed to the water of mystery, the anthropomorphisms, the misplaced pieties, triumphalism, intolerance toward infidels, supposed miracles, and other supernatural imaginings. Those are all memes without substance. So yes, toss out the baby, but save the water. Here end the readings. And I could almost say, I'm done now and let's talk about these things. But I won't. It was about a year and a half ago that the ongoing but barely simmering theist-humanist debate within Unitarian Universalism came to full boil. The source of its revival was a full-page, full-color print advertisement placed in the fall 2009 issue of the UU World magazine, placed prominently on the inside front cover. The ad was from the Freedom From Religion Foundation, based in Madison, Wisconsin, and their co-president, Dan Barker, has spoken at this congregation, what, twice? Now, given that the fifth source of inspiration from which our tradition draws is, quote, humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us of idolatries of the mind and spirit, unquote, you might well ask what all the fuss was about. Well, I have a copy of the issue in question. The big front page story was about the gospel of inclusion, Carlton Pearson's universalism. Carlton Pearson was a Pentecostal bishop, African American, had a megachurch in Tulsa, Oklahoma, started preaching universalism, lost everything. The remnants of his congregation have merged with our All Souls UU Church in Tulsa. But still, universalism. And there's the inside front cover. It says, are you looking for a sign? How about a bus sign? Definitely not a sign from above. And it shows six different versions of the foundation's bus sign campaign with quotes from a variety of famous atheists. These quotes range from, I don't believe in God because I don't believe in Mother Goose, from Clarence Darrow, to faith is believing what you know ain't so, from Mark Twain. In the following issue, senior editor Jane Greer noted that for the first time ever, an ad had drawn more response than any other part of the magazine. And that was just the emails and letters sent directly to UU World. Because the Unitarian Universalist bloggers actively weighed into the fray as well. For weeks, there was traffic in the blogosphere about it. Interestingly, the letters were about half and half. Half supported the placement of the ad, and the other half said, shouldn't have done it. But this was by no means the first time this particular issue had been debated loudly and publicly. So to put it all in context, we can go back to the mid-19th century to pick up the roots of this split in our Unitarian and Universalist heritage, mostly Unitarian then. Emerson's Transcendentalists moved God out of heaven, claiming that one could get in touch with the divine in nature, and through the use of one's own human intuition. The Reverend Theodore Parker preached about the difference between the truth of the actual words that Jesus spoke and the interpretation of those teachings by human beings. At about that time, our forebears were beginning to see how restricting their views to Christianity limited the nature and form of their faith. At the same time, Unitarianism was moving westward into the frontier, establishing churches as new communities were settled, and often the Unitarian Church was the only church in town. So from the establishment of the new Western Unitarian Conference in the 1850s, and there's a significant Wisconsin connection to that, to the turn of the century, there was much debate over whether the term Christian should be included in the Constitution and bylaws of the American Unitarian Association or of the Western Unitarian Conference. And if you're interested in the fascinating history, you know, I can go on for another hour about it, but I won't right now. You can study the life of Unitarian Minister Jenkin Lloyd Jones, who was the first secretary for the Western Conference. He was a visionary, an evangelist, an innovator, and founder and editor of Unity Magazine, which carried numerous articles and letters concerning the mid-19th century debate over the identification of Unitarianism with Christianity. And the debate over how Christian one had to be a minister, heated up in 1875 when the American Unitarian Association refused to list the Reverend William J. Potter in its annual yearbook or directory of ministers because he declined to say he was Christian. And again in 1894, when the AUA once again amended its constitution, including the phrase Christian churches in the body's official name, as well as the statement that these churches accept the religion of Jesus. Of course, there was also a statement that none of this was to be taken as a creedal test. That was the out. Now, if you're wondering, it wasn't until the mid-20th century that a universalist minister said he was not a Christian. He, in his ordination service, struck the line that he was being ordained to the Christian ministry. Now, I want to make a note here that throughout these heated debates, there was no explicitly anti-Christian writing in the pages of Unity. These ministers weren't against Christianity because most of them actually did consider themselves followers of Jesus. But they saw adherence to a creed as limiting the nature and form of religion. And individual freedom of belief was important to them. Now, all of this really came out into the open in the early 20th century when explicitly humanist ministers like John Dietrich and Curtis Rees went public with their views. John Dietrich served our church in Minneapolis, which has been served by a humanist minister ever since. Dietrich addressed the 1921 meeting of the Western Unitarian Conference, predicting that, quote, religion would have no outlook unless it could be brought into harmony with modern thought, relinquishing the idea of a divine being, and telling humans they are masters of their own destiny, unquote. Think John Dietrich was an atheist? Yes? No? Shake or nod? Are you awake? John Dietrich, arguably the most staunch humanist of his time, rejected the label of atheist. He associated atheism with the view that humans were miniature machines responding mechanically in the universe, denied that personality could be limited to such a simple mechanical explanation. Now, during the time that Dietrich was preaching humanist ideas, these ideas spread. And some of you know that the original Humanist Manifesto was written in 1933. There were 34 men who signed it, and they were all men. Anybody want to take a guess how many were Unitarians? Tom, you already know. Out of 34. I should say, how many were Unitarian ministers? All of them? About half. 15 were Unitarian ministers. And there was one Universalist minister. There were some who were members of Unitarian congregations, but I know who the ministers are. Now, the first Humanist Manifesto spoke of humanism as a religion. It wasn't written to demolish religion. It was written as a manifesto proposing a new religion. It was explicitly a statement of the values of religious humanism. It stated that religions have always been means for realizing the highest values of life. And it was an attempt to establish a religion shaped for the needs of this new modern age. Okay? Now, for a document purporting to proclaim a new religion, the manifesto had some distinct weaknesses. UU minister William Murray, in his book Reason and Reverence, pointed some of these out. One is that its focus was on independence and autonomy of individual persons. They really didn't talk much about relationship or community support. And that's a big part of what religion and church is. It also said nothing about the reality of tragedy in human lives. And we all know about tragedy. It's the inevitable pain and grief and other losses that we suffer. And as a sidebar, John Dietrich was terrible at pastoral care. He told people to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and get on with life. Similarly, the manifesto ignored the reality and depth of evil in the world, that there is real evil. It was kind of naive. And it lacked a sense of mystery and wonder, which was alluded to in the reading from Ramo. It suggested that everything unknown was possible to know, eventually, through the use of the scientific method and reason. Now, the second version of the manifesto, written in 1973, was written in the shadow of the experience of World War II and the Holocaust. It was a little more humble, no less idealistic, and the principles that it affirmed are remarkably, or maybe not so remarkably, similar to our Unitarian Universalist principles that you can find in the front of our hymnal. So getting back to that infamous ad, what was all the fuss about? What was all the fuss about? Well, the main point of contention for most people who objected to the ad was that the Freedom From Religion ad appeared to be equating all religion with supernaturalism and using quotes that were deliberately chosen to provoke religious people, whether they were believers or not. Now, you remember those quotes that I read to you. Religion is believing that, you know, in something you know isn't so. I don't believe in God because I don't believe in Mother Goose. That's kind of in your face. The UU World Business Manager, Scott Ulrich, later wrote in the next issue a carefully worded statement that stopped short of apology, but did admit that this particular ad should have been rejected. It should not have appeared. Now, I agree with the Foundation's stated purpose to maintain the separation of church and state. I firmly believe in that principle. But I agree with Ulrich's reasoning that since the magazine does reserve the right to reject advertising that is inconsistent with the mission of the UUA, the ad shouldn't have been published. We are a religion, notwithstanding that many people like to call us a movement. We are a religion. We are a faith tradition. We gather together as people of faith. We often say things like that at the beginning of our worship services. We may not share a set of common beliefs. In fact, I know we don't. But as 16th century Unitarian Francis David once said, we know that we need not think alike to love alike. Our congregations do covenant to affirm a set of principles, and many of us have come to adopt those as ethical guides for living. And in these days of the Tea Party, there might be danger in being known as the atheist church, which is how a relative of ours once characterized us. Some of you might recall that in 2004, the comptroller for the state of Texas ruled that a UU church in Denison, Texas, was not a religion and not eligible for tax-exempt status on the basis that there was no one system of belief. Several other organizations were also had their tax-exempt status pulled. And, of course, it was appealed, and the state of Texas had to go back and approve the tax-exempt status. But it does raise the question of what constitutes a religion. Because the test the comptroller uses was, do members have a belief in God or gods or a higher power? I think the answer is that some do and some don't. Religions. We know that Buddhists don't have to believe in a higher power. But, you know, if we Unitarian Universalists look to our understanding of the interconnectedness of all existence, what we commonly call the interdependent web of life, we can make an argument for a general belief in something greater than ourselves. We are a religion. Now, many of us call ourselves religious humanists. And the philosophy of religious humanism has many positive points, which is why our Unitarian Universalist faith considers it a source of inspiration. Rejecting supernaturalism, humanism reminds us that our faith is rooted in the real world, the here and now, and not in an afterlife that may or may not exist. To borrow Penn Jillette's words, we have blue skies and rainbows and Hallmark cards, and that has to be enough. And it's everything in the world. We have each other, and that has to be enough. And since relationship is emphasized, human forgiveness is the only form of forgiveness possible. We're reminded that treating people right is important. And sometimes we don't have to get it right the first time, because we can forgive each other. Any salvation of humanity from poverty, racism, classism, war, any other evil, must be wrought by human hands. But let's look at that source again. These humanist teachings are supposed to warn us of idolatries of the mind and spirit. Think about that. What if they have become idols? The definition of idolatry is excessive or blind devotion. And I remind you here that there are different varieties of humanism. Humanism, in general, forged from modernism and Enlightenment thought, has not worn well under postmodernism. There are potential problems with humanism that we don't often speak about. There is danger in coming to believe that humanity is functionally ultimate, that we are the top of the heap, the top of the ladder, that we have all the answers. It's the same danger that comes with fundamentalist Christian belief that humanity is the crown of God's creation and that we have dominion over the earth and all its creatures. It's the same. It is easy to slip into this hubris. And good people, such arrogance is unwelcoming to a good number of people who are seeking the freedom of belief and a safe place to seek answers to questions of ultimate concern, which our liberal faith offers. So please remember, if you are a religious humanist, that there are many ways to be humanist. And I was reminded of this recently. A colleague sent me a link to The Christian Humanist. Does that surprise anyone? It's a website with articles on Christian humanism. These are people who believe that the teachings of Jesus, like our principles, are good ethical guidelines for their lives. They don't necessarily believe in God. They don't necessarily believe in any of the supernaturalism or the miracles. But they're followers of Jesus' teachings. And another colleague of mine who identifies as a UU Christian, the Reverend Naomi King, wrote to me recently that she participated in a panel discussion where she was asked, whether she thought Unitarian Universalism was abandoning humanism for theism. That's a concern for some folks. Her response was, you know what? We're all humanists. We all believe that what we do matters, and we need to work together to create a better world. There are different flavors of humanism, as there are different flavors of theism and any other kind of ism you want to talk about. We need to stop worrying about that and recognize the diversity within our congregations. Our welcoming embrace as Unitarian Universalists of many beliefs and traditions demands that we find a way to embrace the absence of supernaturalism and yet acknowledge that there is much we don't know and may never know. In another quote from Chet Ramo's wonderful little book is that the three little words that science has done the most for the human race, the three little words that we can say is, I don't know. Because even as we expand our knowledge, so too does the body of what we don't know expand. Think about that one. We need to find a way that uses reason without recourse to cynicism or sarcasm toward those with differing beliefs. A way that helps us become more fully human and maybe more fully and openly humanist, using all of the sources of inspiration available to us. May we make this radical welcome a reality. So may it be so.